Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. Hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving. Had some great food, spent some time with loved ones, and was able to get a nice nap in before the real craziness of the holiday season kicks off. Today, we are chatting with Adam Ketta, one of the owners of Daughter, a cafe, coffee shop, wine bar in Brooklyn. We chat about the social pact that all New Yorkers agreed to when living in the city, his time spent as a barista in some of the great cafes of New York, and how he went from a barista to a business owner, and how he balances it all in the city that never sleeps, probably thanks to the incredible coffee they serve. Then it's a deep dive into the archive when the Desert Sharks stop by the studio for a hard-charging New York full-flung rock and roll session. They were swinging by to talk about their first full-length album and played some of their singles, Ooh Hey, from their EP, Template Hair. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network. Adam, welcome to Snacky Tunes. It's the day before Thanksgiving, so I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and chat with us. What's your table looking like this holiday season?
Oof, it's going to be a big one, honestly. Me and my good friends, we've all broken down all of our jobs for cooking. So I got some stuff that I got to stop at, like doing the prep work tonight and then do the delivery tomorrow morning to their apartment. And we're just going to finish off cooking in the morning. But think about the meats on the tables, good amount of carbs, lots of dessert, and a lot of wine. Lots and lots.
Yeah,
of wine.
I mean, yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's so nice that you have like friends and this like community to come together. I feel like that's what so much like Thanksgiving is about.
Honestly, and it's so crazy because like I feel like we didn't really need the holiday to be able to do this. We're just now doing like we would do this on a weekend, but now we're just gonna. This is just an excuse to celebrate our friendship on a Thursday now. But
I mean, definitely excited.
And
I
just,
love that.
Like the foods that we normally would not partake in, like mac and cheese all the time. Yeah.
Sure. I'm about to make a vat of cream spinach, which I would eat more of, but yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, just, you can only give that to yourself like maybe twice a year. Twice a year.
Speaking of friends and coming together, you know, I want to talk a little bit about Daughter, which is your cafe. And in reading about it and following along, I find that like friends and community is a central focus of what you're trying to do. How does that differ from some of the other coffee shop, cafe, wine bars in the city with you having this like focus on the neighborhood at the core of what you are?
Well, the thing is, I don't know if we're so different because I feel like most of what I've learned is just coming from everybody else in the sense of just like, just be friendly people and just inviting people. Like some of the best jobs or best places that I've worked at or have even visited, it's just like they've done the right thing in the sense of like, just welcome people in with open arms. And I think that's something that we try to do, at least at Daughter. Just like once people come in, we want them to feel like they're being welcomed.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back a little bit because you're born in Harlem, raised in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Work in Brooklyn. Now I lived, when I moved to New York, I moved to, you know, where my family's from, which is Brooklyn. So I was like one borough guy. So I don't meet a lot of like triple borough people. How is that? Yeah. And you know, it's like you're smiling too, because you also, like most people are like outer borough to Manhattan or maybe Manhattan outer borough, but it's like two at most. Like, what is your what's your perspective on the city since you've lived in like three out of five?
Oh, this city's amazing. This is the best city in the world. I literally went on a whole tirade about this last week, Friday, because I was doing late night dancing. And I just remember just like thinking about, this is the only city in the world where you could just like have so much fun and then just like live, like everybody's living their own lives. Like there's so many different stories going on and you get to see it even in the, going into different boroughs. You go to the Bronx, you go to Queens. It's so culturally different every time you leave each place that it just feels like you just feel always surprised. You're never bored. I love the city so much. It's like a big giant playground that's sometimes struggling, but at the same time, so welcoming.
Yeah. I mean, I really do feel like, I mean, it's very individual, but at the same time, it's like things will shift and everybody's in it together. And it's a sense of community. Like all you got to do is just be on a train platform, that train just starts being late and everyone just starts like coming together being like, where's the train? What's going on? I got this thing to do.
And it feels good. Honestly, you can all share it. Even like I feel like The Office, I'm not a big fan of The Office. It's not my show that much, but the eye contact that they make, the little side eyes that you make with each that you see that happens a lot in The Office. I'm like, you do that in a daily in New York City. You see somebody come on a train tripping, you're going to make eye contact with the next person sitting across from you. It's like, oh, snap. Here it goes. We all know what's about to go down right now. And it's like, that's the one thing about New York. I love the fact that everybody's in on it. It's like, you know when something's about to go down or if it's going to be a good time too. You just, everybody's all connected because we see it. We see this city for what it is.
Yeah. And you've all sort of signed this like communal pact to be like, we're in this and there's a certain way to act. And if someone is stepping out a little bit, you're just like, please don't make me be the person to have to get involved.
Oh, absolutely not. It's so funny because my friend, he just moved. Before the pandemic, he went back up to Boston because his wife was going to school at Harvard. And they came back during the pandemic. And the first week back, he started working at Black Fox Coffee in the city. And he had to get there. They were opening at 7 a.m. So he had to start leaving around. Like, he had to leave his apartment around 6 a.m. 6 a.m. in the train into the city. And he says, out of nowhere, especially the pandemic time, it was the wild, wild west of the train system, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Anything was going at this point. But he says, out of nowhere, this grown man comes into the train cart in a diaper. Just like, fully naked, just in a diaper, and sits down. And somebody else who was on the train just kept looking at the guy. And Charles, he kept looking at the person who kept looking at the guy, was just like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't look at him. Stop looking at him. You're going to start him up. Just let it be.
Just let it be. He's sitting.
He's not touching nobody. He's not saying anything. Let the man sit in the diaper on the train. It's just how it's going to go today.
Yeah. We look, I got 5 stops. You got 6 more. Just let it go.
Let it be. Let it rock. Like this. I've seen worse situations.
That's for another conversation. So growing up in the city and being all over it, what drew you into the world of like coffee shops and cafes? Was that always your thing growing up? Did you get in really young? Were you a patron or did you start working there? Like, what brought you into that world?
What brought me into that world was I always knew, especially in high school, it's weird, I knew that coffee shops, you made tips, which I was like, as a kid, that was like crazy to me, especially back then when the minimum wage was like $7.25. You
hasn't
like,
changed that much. Yeah.
Hasn't changed that much. Yeah. It's like still pretty damn low. But so I was just like, I got to get in on this. But my first introduction to the food industry was Haagen-Dazs, actually. That was one of my first jobs that I've gotten. And I just remember that being like a good starting point for me where I was just like, I know the food industry is where I want to be at. It was truly just, it was a messy time in my life because I definitely got fired from that job. It was a horrible job. I was 19 going into 20. So I wouldn't call myself employer of the month back then. But then the next job after that, chocolate bar, that solidified that I knew the coffee industry was for me. Chocolate bar was this place on West 12th Street in the West Village.
Oh, yeah.
You knew Chocolate Bar? Crazy place. That place was amazing. Allison, she was one of the kindest owners. She really inspired me to know that I want to have my own coffee shop one day. And that was like back in like 2014, 2015. Oh, wait, no, sorry. No, 2014, I'll say.
Yeah. And you worked at some other legendary spots. Toby's Estate, which I remember, and Day Move and things like that. As you worked your way deeper into like the more upper echelons of the coffee and cafe world, what did you learn? When did you start having an idea that you wanted to have your own spot? Like, or was it all just like you always knew you wanted to open up your own spot?
Always knew that I wanted to have my own spot, but I never knew it took a while to figure out what I wanted it to look like. And I would say at Toby's Estate, the thoughts became a lot more visceral. But at Say, when I worked at Say, that's when it really became like, I can do it. And Say gave more economics to letting me be able to do it. Like, they paid, their minimum wage was a lot higher. It genuinely made these kind of decisions a little easier. But the concept of it, I don't think was like, I feel like I usually get inspired by like travels So it really was born in like the Netherlands. That truly was the Netherlands and Germany. Those two places really inspired the idea of like what I wanted from having a cafe. And it was just because like
different vibe than New York cafes. Totally different vibes.
It's the fact that you can, even as a person who's traveling in these places, I would go to coffee shops and I would just like walk in and they would treat you like you've been here for 3 or 4 years already. And that's something you don't always get in New York. New York has this such a hustle and bustle concept of life that you forget to just slow down and check in on the people sometimes.
Yeah.
That's like the one thing where I see we're really good at, daughter. I feel like coffee is always like, is always the most debatable topic. It's like, is it good coffee? Is it bad coffee? Blah, 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 blah. But the one thing we do, we talk with you. We will have a full conversation. We have regulars that we chat with all the time. Love us or hate us, sometimes you're going to get a conversation.
Yeah. And I think that approach, because even living in New York, I mean, I was never a coffee shop, like, I'm going to hang out guy. I feel like, and there was no middle. It was either like you're grab and go coffee or you've camped out for the day. And then I feel like the coffee shop people were more into the like, we're just a transactional, I give you your coffee, you give me a tip. And the people who camped out all day were like a bit of like an eyesore.
They were, because those are usually the people who only tipped once and they just took up real estate at this point.
Yeah. But I think that's because it wasn't as welcoming as you mentioned about like the European approach, which I think is what more daughter is, of just being like, it's community, come in, it's a space, you hang out, it's reciprocal in like what you get from the customer and what you give as an owner.
Honestly, it's funny because we just did a pop-up and one of the people we did a pop-up with, she was like, I will say this is the busiest pop-up we've worked in a long while. And I haven't worked on the register in a long while.
Yeah.
So I found myself just chatting. I was just like truly just talking. I swear to you, I could see people were like, not the customers. The customers were digging it. Everybody else was like, No. Hey boy. It's like, move this line faster.
Move this fast. If you want to expedite, if you want to hand out drinks and talk to the customer, that's fine. But not when you're taking orders.
Not when I'm working a reg. That's a whole other ball game right there. And honestly, it's the New Yorker. I mean, I do think that's the one thing you're guaranteed. I feel like people get it always wrong. They say New Yorkers are mean. I'm like, I don't know those New Yorkers. I know you will have a conversation with a stranger forever in New York if you give the opportunity to. You could talk to you go to the Bronx, you will have a conversation with everybody on the corner if you allowed yourself to.
Oh yeah. If you, it's two modes. You either keep it moving or you're talking to everyone. Let's take a quick musical break. And when I come back, I want to talk about you switching from being a barista to a business owner, some of the music that you can expect to hear at Daughter and the new spot, Shay, which is opening imminently. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
When the water's on the rise, the waves are getting high, getting rough, you stay with me. When the going's getting tough and life is on the rocks, you stay up, you stay with me. When the clock begins to tick and I am losing it, you speed me up, you stick with me. When the moon is on the rise, the people drop like flies, you stay. floor and people shut their doors, you open up, step out with me. When the heart is on the line, you never say it's gonna be fine, you just stay there with me.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Adam Keita, the owner, one of the owners of Daughter Cafe. And we're talking about you going back and working the line. But I want to go back to a little bit earlier from when you went from being a barista to a business owner. Because I myself had cut my teeth in college at coffee shops. And like the idea of going from like rigging up pastries and doing pour overs to actually doing like a P&L is a very, very big difference in gap. So how did you learn? How'd you get people to take you seriously? Like, what was that process like of opening up your own spot?
Well, it was strange. I'll say that for sure. Definitely. Do I think everybody took me seriously? I don't know. That's a good, that one right there. The verdict is still not out on that one yet, but I think I just tried. I just was like, I got to gamble on myself on this one for sure. And I think originally it was a lot of feelings of the imposter syndrome, trying to just like get past that. Cause like, I've, like you said, how do you jump from like making pour overs, being on bar, making, I'm putting pastries out and all of these different things. And then how do you go from that to being a business owner? And you just do it. That's the thing. You just, I think in just in general, like in life, you just do, you just have to just do it until it makes sense to you. And until it's like, actually making moves. It's hard. I feel like there's no actual roadmap to this one. It just happened one day. Like even when we first opened, I was like, whoa,
got this open. Going back to that community aspect, especially opening up a space that is not a club, not like a restaurant. Like, I feel like you opened up a spot where people pop in for a coffee, pop in for wine. Like, it's not a huge endeavor, especially since you're opening up in the neighborhood, because you were opened up in Crown Heights, if I right, correct? Yeah. So it's like, hey, we're just another spot you can go. And in, I know in New York, everyone's looking for a spot like outside of their house or outside of their work.
Great. And what's cool for us is that we're in a spot that there's not other coffee shops. I know a lot of people, that's what a lot of people love doing. They love going around other coffee shops to open up shops. And I'm like, that's weird. So we went the polar opposite. We were like, let's open up where there's no other shops.
Which is smart.
Yeah. It's crazy though, because you don't see that usually being the case. Most coffee shops are always like at least a block away from another coffee shop. Makes no sense to me.
I mean, I understand that density argument, but in New York, it's like there's a neighborhood everywhere and people want that. And people want people to invest back in the community. And I have to imagine with like regulars and being a part of that, you're seeing a return on that investment.
We are. And honestly, it's like every day, even down the first, like the first day or first month we opened, I remember me, Brian, and Sarah, we were like, we're going to be the only ones working. And we knew our goal was this, $500 a day. If we can make $500 a day, we can make a pretty, we could pay ourselves a little bit and we could pay the bills. And we surpassed that. And it was just such a humbling feeling right there. Just like knowing that we thought so small of ourselves and the community gave us so much more. And that was humbling.
I mean, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning about New York, that is that's the beauty of the city, is that not always, because I don't want to like speak in like in 100%, because nothing 100% New York, but there is a certain reward. There is a certain reward to giving back to the city and to being a part of it, and maybe not believing in yourself, and other New Yorkers go like, I believe in you. Like, I believe in what you're doing. I believe you. And especially when you're seeing people who you know, who you see every day, like, here's my money. Thank you for the coffee. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. And I agree with you. I feel like New York City is the city everybody's struggling. And even to the person, the homeless person or the houseless person who struggles the most in the city, the fact that this is also a city where everybody argues about it too. We talk about these problems. We're not unaware of like everybody's struggle in the city, and we all know that these exist. And it's, I think the city is the city that you struggle, but everybody cares. Even though you won't hear, like, I feel like people won't say I care out loud, but people care. They care more than they think they do.
Do people respond to that extra level of care with the approach? Because you did mention being more European style, more, you know, more open, more chatting, more things like that. Have people respond to that, especially when they go, oh, it's not just another coffee shop in our neighborhood that's just like anywhere else. Like, it is a different vibe and a different approach to serving people.
Oh, people respond. Like, they follow us on Instagram. They see us in the park. Like, I live two blocks away from the cafe, so I spend time in the playground. I walk around with my baby. Like, people, I love the fact that people are involved in our lives. Yes, sometimes it could kill a lot of the autonomy of yourself. It's like, I do love having like that kind of special place where I can walk around the neighborhood and just like my Nike slides and my hoodie and just call it a day. But it is really good to just like be a part of a community where people are just chatting with each other, and we can walk, us as owners, walk in and out. We talk with people there. Like, we're not, there is no real separation of like the bar, the person who's working behind the bar, the people who own the place, and the customer. Everybody is on the same level of communication in some degree.
I mean, it's a real neighborhood, and I, you know, I know you mentioned the playground and being with your kid. I mean, those barista hours, those business hours are long. How do you find that balance of running a business, having a kid, being in New York, and trying to have a little slice of New York City?
Dog, I am putting mileage on my body. That's the thing. Ah. Right now, I am.
How those knees, how's that back, right? Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, no, I'm like, I made a joke last week. I was like, if I thought I was living to 80, I think I might have, in the last few years, I've taken at least like 3 years off that right there. Just from just like, just being and living. But it's been, honestly, it's weird because once you get used to the routine, it's like, having a baby, that was actually the most challenging part of like all of this. Cause like a baby wakes up at 2 a.m. and it went sometimes, and it's like, oh, I guess I'm up at 2 a.m.
I guess I'm up.
But then after that, 3 hours later, I guess I'm working too. That's crazy.
You
got to go with that. You got to just like, and it's weird. Your brain starts to develop. And after that, you start to find joy in other things. It's like, joy is the one funny thing, because it's never fickle. It's never stagnant. It's pretty fickle. Actually, you could find it. Yes, I love sleep, but also, you know what? I enjoy walking in the street sometimes at 6 a.m. Actually, that's like my favorite time of the day now in New York City. I love doing the pastry deliveries at 6 to 7 a.m. because there's nobody outside. I usually take a beat real fast, roll down the car window while driving because it's quiet. Sip on a coffee. It's such a nice feeling.
Well, you have access to incredible coffee, so that's definitely got to help.
With cheating. With those early. Just cheating a little bit. I'm not doing no bodega coffee at that time. I refuse. That's I got to be up visiting my mother in the Bronx if I'm doing bodega
coffee. Yeah. It's like, I got 2 minutes. I need a light. I need it sweet. I need to go. Only time. You know, when I think back to my time in cafe, and I think about, you know, I'd work morning shifts and night shifts, and I know that you have coffee during the day and wine at night, you know, I always would think about the music that was played. And I got to imagine that you guys have a killer soundtrack. And I'd be remiss not to ask you, like, what's on the stereo? How does the vibe evolve throughout the day? Like, who gets to control it? Because when I worked, it was whoever doing the coffee, who's ever making the coffee got to pick.
Yeah. So for us, it's like whoever opens, they are the one who sets 100%. The tone.
100%.
And that's it. And by midday, once the opener leaves, the closer gets the mid person don't get hot. They don't have control.
Sorry, bro.
I'm sorry. It's like, you're there, but the problem is that the closer is already doing the hard work and the opener, they have together. So those two should have the right to choose. And honestly, the music changes. It varies so often. Like even when I was working, I made sure my number one rule for when I'm working, this music has to be very loud. And this goes, I go against like the coffee shop norms usually. I am like, I want music loud. I want nice drums. I like genuinely it's a lot of funk, soul, can be some hip hop. And then I throw in some folk in the mix just so I can throw people off. I like changing it up a little bit.
A little curveball,
but then it changes some, like the music taste inside the shop is so fluent. Yeah. It's like you got Sarah who loves just like all of this dad rock and yacht rock. It's just so much. It's like a lot of different sounds going on. Sade, they listen to so much.
So much Sade these days.
Yeah, I'm like, it's so much. I love it. I'm like, that's everywhere.
It's everywhere now.
It's everywhere now. I'm digging it too. I'm like, not mad at it. Definitely not mad at it. Yeah.
It's always nice when you walk in and you're like, I see who's on the bar. I see who's on the register. I know the music and I know the drink I'm going to get. Like, I just know, like, just that little moment of just respite when you're walking into a spot like yours.
Honestly, it's such a real, it's a really good feeling. It's.
Yeah. So listen, you got a huge life. You got the kid, you got the business, and you're about to have a new business opening up in December. One, why? But two, tell me about Shay.
Shay, I will say, was an accidental kind of business. We went there.
Just like that second kid. You're like, whoops.
Whoops. Yeah. It's like, how did we do it again? And it was one of those moments, like, we were looking for a kitchen to move our, like, the ovens and stuff out of the water because we wanted to do renovations. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Kai, who owns Cecily Tommy, and she was like, oh, I got a space. Saw the space, and I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's like, here we go again. And I was like, I'll take it. Let's do it. Let's rock with it. We're going to lean into this and just see where the chaotic storm takes us. On this magical ride. And I'm excited. Definitely at first it seemed scary again because I was like, well, spending more of my own personal money.
Because you know now. It's not like the first one where you're like, oh, I had no idea like what it would take. And now you've done it. You're like, I know what it takes.
Yeah, I know what it takes. And I knew what was going to happen. I was like, well, bare bones. You're going to give it all. You're going to give everything you can in this moment. And then after, just going to go with it.
I love it. And that was December. And is it similar vibe? I know you're serving the same coffee and some pastries during the day, but different nighttime program with food.
So the goal is to actually make this completely different, really leaning into like not being pigeonholed into like, I think my dream is to really reinvent what it means to be a coffee shop in New York just a cafe in New York. So we're not opening at like the traditional coffee hours. So we're going to open at 10 a.m. Just ready, just like shake things up.
I'm taking opening shift.
Yeah. It's like, I can actually do that. Open a shift right there.
Yeah.
The goal is 10 a.m. now to about like 12 or 1 in the morning.
I see. I got you. Spot.
And we want to treat it more like people stick around. We want this to be the place where people come hang out. You can hang here all day. We don't mind if you hang here all day, but we are going to have strict rules about laptops at some point. Like, I don't mind people bringing laptops, but after like 3 o'clock, it's going to be like, look, I get it. I want to get work done too, but look, how about this? Take a glass of wine and just meditate on the work you're already just done.
Yeah, no, and I get that vibe. Sometimes, look, you don't have to turn off, but you can't do it here. You know what I mean? It's gonna do a bit of a vibe shift.
And what's crazy is that people are pretty okay with that. People are really okay with that.
Again, it's that communal pact in New York. It's like, listen, you could hang here. No one's kicking you out. It's just we're just gonna shift up the mode.
Just a little bit.
We're not saying you can't be on your phone, but you just can't be on your computer.
You can't be on your computer. If you have a tablet, sure, you could be on your tablet. Actually, don't even mind. I think a tablet looks a little bit better.
Yeah. What about that tablet keyboard combo? Is that pushing it a little bit?
That's pushing the buttons. Right. I feel like when Apple started doing that, I was like, all right, you're tripping.
All right. You're right.
Well, listen,
Adam, congratulations on everything. If people want to check out Daughter and the new spot, where can they go? How can they follow along?
Honestly, follow us on Instagram. It's our Instagram for Daughter is DaughterNY. And for Shay is Shay Brooklyn. It's on Instagram as well. Yeah, follow us. We constantly keep ourselves up to date, putting all of the events out there. We got karaoke night on Thursdays now at Daughter, which is awesome. Yeah,
what's your song? It's crazy. Do you hop on?
Oh, I got – it's going to be Suddenly I See by KT Tunstall. Hot song.
Hot.
Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. When it comes on, it's like not one other person is not going to be – it's gold.
They're like, Adam, get up there. You're like, I couldn't possibly. I couldn't have passed me. Well, listen, thank you so much. Big shout out to Skylar for setting this up. We have a song from the archives and then a – live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, old man, turn and scratch his chin. Said, son, I wouldn't know where to begin. But your daddy's gone, he's gone down south. Was all he would talk about. We never blamed it on the soil. The sun burned earth, or the prices of the oil. This border town is my home. I got rattlesnake guts in a desert full of bones. Now my sister, I'm going to find someone. So I won't come back no more. No more. Lord, I see red. The storm is now the sun is shining on my hood. The statue on the dashboard of Maria looks beautiful. And I'm heading down south. Got tequila in my veins and the devil in my mouth. Tell my sister I've gone to find someone. So I won't come back no more. No more. Lord, I see red. It's storming. It's alright, I got jukebox tears and stones for us. Hey, it's alright, I got jukebox tears under turquoise skies. Hey! Some demons to get even, now my demons count rosaries. We never blamed it on the soil. The sun scorched earth where the desert meets the sky. Tell my sister I'm going to find someone. So I won't come back no more, no more. Lord, I see.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to let you know that Heritage Radio Network's Julia Child Fellowship application is now open. The fellowship offers an enriching experience for aspiring food writers and journalists who share our passion for food systems change. The fellowship is a great way to progress in the field of food journalism and digital media and will start in early January 2024. This fellowship will provide participants with hands-on experience, mentorship, and access to an extensive network of industry professionals. The application deadline is November 27, 2023. Check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Julia Child Foundation Writing Fellowship link to learn more. If you or someone you know has interest in food studies and journalism, this might be a great fit. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the application today. Thank you.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Hello, Desert Sharks. How are you?
Hello.
Hi. We're good.
You said that you met through Craigslist personal ads.
Yes.
Which just went away.
It did? Week.
It yeah, did. Because of sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking laws.
Oh,
yes.
No.
So if we were to go and find your personal ads and how you met, what were each of your personal ads?
Wait, Sunny, were you the original personal ad?
I think so.
Go ahead. Tell us what you said.
Looking for a relationship or music.
No, you did not.
Not quite.
What year was this?
I don't know.
2011 or 12. Rebecca knows.
Rebecca knows.
Well, she's got a memory like a
Well, actually, Rebecca
hawk.
Had the first one.
Doesn't matter. Basically, when I saw, it was your ad.
Who was I?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Stephanie.
Hi,
I
Stephanie.
Play bass and sing in Desert Sharks. I saw Rebecca's ad. No, did I see
drums.
Your ad?
You saw my ad.
I saw Sunny's ad that was like, I'm into Sleater-Kinney and...
Typo Negative.
It was a mix of the most random shit. It was like Sleater-Kinney and Typo Negative and Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar and... Gosh, I don't know what else you said.
Susie and the Banshees.
It was a bunch of random stuff, but it was a lot of female bands.
So. And I'm like, you're like, oh, okay, this works.
Yeah, because I just moved here and I was like, I'm bored. I want to play with other people and I'd never played with other women before, so I saw her ad and I responded.
And were the rest of you all Craigslist or was it just that and then
all of us? So Rebecca had to add up that she was looking to join a band that was already established and I was like, would you want to start something new? And she's like, okay.
Oh. We forced me, Sunny, and Rebecca. Rebecca plays drums, Sunny's lead guitar. And we all met at a Starbucks one awkward day, and we were like, hi.
"Oh yeah."
I had met Sunny before that. It was just the two of us.
Yeah.
And how hard was it? Why did you want to join something established as opposed to something new?
I honestly don't even remember saying that. I think I was just looking for anything. I just wanted to play some music in a band.
I mean, this is like 2012, so this is like before people would, you know, really before maybe OkCupid was at that time, but
ooh,
it's like,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, there's it's still maybe not like
maybe Nerve.com.
Oh
what
yeah,
the heck is Nerve?
Never heard of that.
I don't know what that is.
Grandma over here with her Nerve.
So was the first meeting just along ones like, hey, did you immediately recognize each other? Had you exchanged photos, or were you just looking for like?
No.
You know, women in
no,
all black.
I had no idea. Well, Rebecca, I met Rebecca first and she sent me a link to her old band. So I knew what she looked like, but she had no idea
who I was.
I
did not know what Sunny looked like.
I didn't
at
know
all.
What either of you looked like. I sent you links to my old bands too.
Yeah.
It just happened by, you know, the universe aligning that we all kind of look like each other. And then we had a different second guitar player for a little, like, for like 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't like us.
Yeah, we never played any shows with her. That was before we actually were
she
established.
She bailed. She was like, this sucks, I'm out.
She's like, no, not interested.
Yeah.
And not then, interested.
And then from there, did you use Craigslist for anything else?
We used Craigslist to find her.
So I Stefania. Posted an ad and I was like, my band broke up and I'd like to play in a band again. And they were the first people that reached out to me. And I auditioned, and then they were like, okay, see you around.
We didn't know what to say.
First off, how long were you a band before you made her?
Like a month.
That's so cold. That's
I didn't know. I didn't know them very well, and everybody was really shy and quiet, and I was like, okay, we'll talk to you soon. But I didn't know if they liked them, so I didn't want to be like, you're in.
Yeah, we wanted to wait to talk to each other before we knew if we liked Stefania.
Well, you made me feel bad.
And I guess we liked her.
We're just so awkward, so we're like, see you around.
Bye. We've been a band for a month.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye. Maybe you'll make the cut.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of other Craigslist ads we have to comb through.
So what do you think, what's going to replace this? Like, how are you going to, like, not saying you would break
bands
up.
Bands of the future?
Yeah, how are they going to find each other?
They're going to just, like, put in a contact lens and, like, touch a button on their arm and be like, who wants to jam? And it'll pop up. No, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Because, like, if I think about, like, if I lived in a different city, I don't even know where I would begin.
MySpace.
MySpace.com.
I wonder if you can make, like, Spotify should do this. Because they should just make, like, make a playlist. And be like, I want to form a band, and then maybe they can match playlists.
Oh my god, you should talk to Spotify and make $1 million.
Dear Spotify,
don't tell anybody.
No,
nobody listen to this part.
Yeah, no, well, no one's listening anyway, so it's fine. Can we hear a song?
Yes.
What are you gonna play for us first?
This song is called "Don't Be Shy, Alicia," which will be coming on a new album, hopefully this year.
Definitely
we're working on it. Definitely this year, working on it.
Here we are, Desert Sharks Live.
I saw online that some, but not all of you, were on Gotham as a band.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know Gotham, it is the prequel to how Batman
Yeah, it's like Baby Batman.
Like Baby Batman. How did that come about, and what was the role of the house band? Or what was the band on Gotham?
What was it called? The Sirens?
It was the house band for the Sirens Club, which was owned by a couple of the female characters, I believe.
The bad boys. Right. Bad girls.
Tabitha and Barbara.
Tabitha and Barbara.
That is correct.
Basically, a friend of ours reached out to us and said, hey, I saw that Gotham is looking for a house band, and they're looking for women. And they reached out to the band, and how did we submit? Yeah.
Well, he tagged us on Facebook on a post looking for a band. Yeah, and then we sent an email to, I guess, the casting agency saying we saw this post, and they responded and are like, yeah, you got it. We like you.
Yeah, it was weird.
Was it multiple episodes or for just one?
Multiple.
Several. Multiple episodes? Yeah, did you have to...
4 or 5.
And what's the... Is it original music or did they write it for you? Or
no,
how does it work?
It's like covers. It's like covers of like 80s jams,
right? The
first
song was I Know What Boys Like by the Waitresses.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it's like their own in-house band. And then everybody's just pretending to play. So like they're like, we want real musicians. But then you play and you're not really playing.
Right. But I couldn't actually hit the drums.
But so who recorded the song? What did you record it?
No.
Like studio musicians. Like
studio musicians.
Yeah, they would just send us a recording and be like, listen to this, know how to play this, and then we just come in and pretend.
They wanted real musicians to pretend.
Real musicians to pretend.
Yeah.
They wanted it to look real.
To look real. Oh, so they didn't want to be like, so you're just like, oh yeah, I know how to play the drums, and like you're just hitting the snare.
They wouldn't let her hit the drums for like most of the scenes, and then one scene they'd let her hit the drums.
When it was a close-up of us, I could hit it. But then otherwise, I had to be silent because there was dialogue going on with the other actors. So, yeah.
So it was really cool.
Did you have any input on the songs or any of the direction? Or, no. Like, or any of that? They're just like, no. You just looked... You were...
Well, what's weird is like every single song had a totally different singer. So we were in like 5 episodes, but... The voice would change from like super high to super low. Like there was a Grace Jones cover that was like a man singing and it was a woman like mimicking. So
you were just the backing band.
Yeah.
We were just the back. And just, like,
no, but it was always the same singer, but her voice just kept changing.
The voice was
episode.
Changing. And then it was like, they'd have you there at the studio for like, I was only in 1 episode. So I'm Stephanie again, the bass player, singer lady. But, like, I didn't have the free time to be the actual singer, so I just played the bass player in 1 episode. And we were there for, like, 11 hours for literally 2 seconds of a clip.
Oh, that was a short one.
Yeah, it was a short clip. But, hey, whatever. It was fun.
Can we hear another song?
Oh, yeah.
Real, but this time play it. Okay, this is a Grace
Jones. This is real. I'm not Grace Jones.
It's a Grace Jones cover.
Seasick. Jesus. Not seasick Jesus, just seasick. Seasick Jesus. Yeah, they're ready.
Thank you.
one of... Hello, hello, hello. Yes, can you hear me?
Woo-hoo! Check, check, microphone.
One of the cool things is that you're on the Bad Cramps comp.
Oh, yeah.
We had Harsh Crowd in a couple years ago, who is graduates now of Willie Mae's Rock Camp for Girls. How did, are you graduates?
Sonny used to teach at
Oh, really? Willie what did you teach there?
I was just like the band coach. So they would put all the girls together in a room and like they would just form bands and none of them knew each other. And it'd be like, we'll guide them. Like, I don't know what the fuck to do. So it's just like play stuff and it sounds good. And it was just interesting to see their dynamic as kids.
How do you encourage kids to be in a band? Like, I mean, what is the advice you give them when, you know, it's 8 to 8. For those who don't know, it's all girls and then some young women. It's 8 to 18, which is obviously a wide range. What advice do you give the same advice to the 8-year-olds, the 18-year-olds, or when they're forming bands, like, what do you tell them?
Kind of, I think just women in general, when they go to play and they're not experienced, they're insecure, and they're like, well, I don't want to play this, or I don't want to sing, it sounds bad. So you just have to encourage them to be like, no, it doesn't sound bad, just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to suck
but
in order to get better.
But what if your kid is a drummer, and it's super loud?
What?
You moved into the basement.
You just have to deal with it. My parents did.
Yeah. Who else was on the comp? And you also did a benefit show
Basic
for it as well.
Basic Bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding. Who else was on that?
Tim Volva.
Sonny knows all the names.
This was a while ago. I don't remember.
Yeah. It was cool though.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Didn't Naomi organize it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she organized it.
Naomi from Basic Bitches organized it, and she's awesome.
And you're also
shout out
working on an upcoming record.
Yes, we're working on our first full length. It's time.
It's time.
It's time!
It's been some time, but you've put out other like DIY projects and EPs and demos and things like
that. We've done 3 sort of EPs at this point. One of them was self-released. One of them was with Converse Rubber Tracks.
And love then one, Rubber Tracks.
Which was awesome. I'm so depressed that they're gone.
I know.
Oh, they're gone.
It was such a good thing.
Such a good thing. Such a cool opportunity to get. Because recording can be really expensive. And then the third one, the last EP we did in 2014 was with Manimal. So it's time. We're overdue. And we've been working for a long time writing our first full length. So.
And what goes into a full length in 2018?
Stress, anxiety, worrying about the world exploding.
Before you get the record out.
Yeah.
Please don't, world don't catch on fire before Desert Shark puts out their first LP.
Please, let us survive. Yeah. I mean, it's like a collective of a few different years of stuff we've been writing. So like there's some tracks on there that are actually like,
what is a song we haven't played in like 2 years? And what is it going
to
be on there?
No, it's not called that. It's called For Loneliness Sake.
It was one of the first songs we ever wrote as a band. We've just been waiting for the full length to put it out.
Yeah, but who knows if we'll still play it. But
just to have it out there. I mean, it's not like everyone puts out a record and they play every song on there.
Yeah, we're just kind of like, let's just no hesitations, expectations. Let's just do whatever. Let's put it out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song, but where can people find your early EPs and demos and upcoming shows?
All of our music is on Spotify and iTunes, but you can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Bandcamp.
At Desert Shark.
And MySpace.
And we don't... Do we have a MySpace?
And we have an AOL profile.
We're on Friendster.
And R.I.P. Craig's...
R.I.P. Craigslist!
Would,
I don't know how you're going to start your band
we wouldn't
now.
Be, well, we've got that Spotify idea.
That's true.
We'll share
I think
it.
That you need to...
We'll do it together.
Know, we'll do it together.
You'll be the face of it.
Oh, my God.
We want to thank Chef Backstrom for coming in, Jameson Fink, and Desert Sharks. If you like this episode, please make sure to subscribe to Snacky Tunes. Leave us a review. Give us 5 stars. And I would also say, head to the archives, and you can listen to other episodes, including the one with Harsh Crowd. Awesome. Who are great. What's the name of the song you're going to take us out with?
The song is called I Don't Know How to Dress for the Apocalypse.
Who does?
Nobody does.
But I hope the apocalypse doesn't come before your LP comes out.
I'm hoping we've got like 5 years and we'll be okay. You know, just to get everything out there.
Yeah. You think it's going to take 5 years to do the LP?
No, 5 years for the apocalypse.
Oh, okay. And then the LP, and then maybe you have a second LP.
We'll be like, check this out.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Take it away. It's
about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.